ladies and gentlemen, live from the West Coast, it's time for Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Your inside look into combat sports.
Maynard and Edgar putting on a show.
Outstanding.
Wow.
And now, the host of the longest running fight show in radio and internet history.
And it's all over. Just like that.
Pedro Fernandez.
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass.
Damas y caballeros, bienvenidos, ladies and gentlemen. Emanating, coming at you from the multi-million dollar Sports Byline Studios. Check it. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Austin imitated but never duplicated 37, make that 30 plus years now. The longest running fight show in history. Welcome to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. My name is Pedro Fernandez. I am your modest host, of course. Yeah, I'm a four-time Golden Glove champion. I know how to fight, and I could write a bit. I'm a former North American Boxing Writer of the Year, WBC Writer of the Year, WBO Writer of the Year, Oregon Writer of the Year. I can go on and on, but the bottom line is, I can write. I could fight at one point in time. I could still write a little bit, but we can have some fun for the next hour, of course, on Sports Byline, talking boxing and mixed martial arts. Primarily, it's boxing, of course. We're going to talk these scandals. The scandals involved with Ruben Hurricane Carter and Charles Sonny Liston. Of course, Sonny Liston taking the dive. Did he take the dive? Of course, the dive against Muhammad Ali the second time. Of course, the first time people thought Liston quit in the corner with that bad shoulder, of course. Then we have Ruben Hurricane Carter. 1966, a guy that knocks out Emil Griffith back in 1964. Of course, Emil considered like the future middleweight champion of the world, but a hot middleweight prospect, no doubt about that. Ruben Hurricane Carter knocked him out in one round in Pittsburgh. Of course, Ruben Hurricane Carter, was he overrated? I mean, or did he kill those people he was suspected of killing in 1966? Of course, him and John Martis were arrested for a triple homicide, which was committed, I think, at the Lafayette Bar. That was in Paterson, New Jersey. I'll never forget that. It was about 2:33 o'clock in the morning. Anyway, bottom line is, did he do it? We'll talk about that in depth and the Sonny Liston mystery as well today on Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Open the phone lines around the planet. You can join me and impart if you'd like. 1-800-878-7529. That's 1-800-878-7529. Or get this, the Guilfrey No Commitment text line. The number, 415-275-1613. That's 415-275-1613. You're tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
Well, but he can play a guitar just like a ring in a bell. Go, go. Go, Johnny, go, go. Go, Johnny, go, go.
Could Muhammad Ali have been talking about Sonny Liston? Possibly, but it was George Foreman at that point in time. Take that back. Sonny Liston, of course, a world heavyweight champion in the early 1960s, beat Floyd Patterson not once but twice, knocked him out in the first round both times, was embarrassing for Patterson. Of course, Patterson would, he wanted to fight Sonny Liston. Patterson's people wanted to keep him away from Sonny Liston because Sonny was supposed to be connected with the mob. I mean, Sonny was a bad guy. Sonny was a guy originally, you know, from Ohio, a tough, tough guy, a tough street thug, beat people up, went to prison, this and that. Just take a look at Sonny Liston, this first cut, the baddest man on the planet.
A right uppercut did the job.
Some heavyweight champs have just been too good to be bad. Just look at the Klitschkos. And no one is going to call Tyson Fury the baddest man on the planet. That's because you have to be bad all over. And Sonny Liston, the original baddest man on the planet, was bad all over. From day one, he was the perfect fit. Born sometime between 1929 and 1932 as the second youngest of his abusive and alcoholic father's 25 children, no one ever knew his birthday, not even Sonny. He worked as a leg breaker for the mob. He did time for beating a policeman bloody. He even pulled a gun on Muhammad Ali at a casino. And he was arrested over 20 times. Unsurprisingly, it was in jail that Sonny learned to box. No one would ever accuse him of being particularly light on his feet or quick with his hands. He was lumbering, even for a heavyweight. But to doubt his brute strength was to lose the fight before it started. The Big Bear's method was simple. Push forward, swing those gigantic fists, watch them fall down. At times, it seemed no more than pure brutality. But by 1963, he'd done it to so many victims that the heavyweight champion of the world had no choice but to fight him. that stage, it was the sublimely skilled Floyd Patterson, the Olympic gold medalist and knockout artist in his own right.
Patterson comes in to finish him off. It's all over bar the shouting.
It was a massacre, as Liston utterly destroyed him in less than a round to claim the WBA and lineal heavyweight titles. In his next fight, he repeated the feat. Floyd Patterson, KO, first round, to retain his titles and claim the first ever WBC heavyweight championship. His 184-centimeter frame was big for the time, but his 213-centimeter reach was obscene, and his fists were so big he had to have his gloves custom made. He ended his career with 50 wins, 39 knockouts, and just 4 losses, largely through power and intimidation. And you know how he died? No, you don't. Because no one does. Like his birthday, no one even knows the date. Sonny Liston was found dead, possibly murdered, alone in his apartment, because that was Sonny Liston. Baddest man on the planet, right till the very end.
Some people get offended, of course. Sonny Liston died. Some people get offended at my professional analysis of the crime scene, being a former San Francisco policeman, having worked plain clothes, being a private investigator for over 25, make that 35 years now. I think I know my way around a crime scene. I saw some pictures of Sonny Liston's alleged crime scene, and it didn't look like a crime scene to me. Anyway, bottom line is we'll get into that in depth. Here's Ali about Liston.
And here, fully robed after the workout you've just seen, comes the heavyweight champion of the world himself. Good to see you, champ.
Howard Cosell, the world's greatest newscaster. How you feeling?
You're very kind, champ, but let's get to cases. You look almost like you're ready for the fight right now.
You're about right, almost ready, after another week. I'm a little tired now, I'm working hard, and after about 3 more days of working, rest until Tuesday for the big night, I'll be ready.
I notice you've stopped with the poetry. You're not making any predictions. How come?
Well, I'm just, I have a prediction for the fight. But, I think I'll be wise not to release it because so many people believe in my predictions and they have been accurate up to date. I'm afraid that it might hurt the gate if I let them know what's going to happen. So I'll just hold a surprise for them.
But
I know what's going to happen.
What's going to happen?
I can't tell you. Let me tell him.
You can't tell him. You got to wait.
Let me tell him.
You can't tell him.
The people are waiting for the prediction.
You can't tell him.
I tell you what's going to happen, see?
No, don't tell him.
No. All right, come on.
I can't tell
you. You're going to knock him out what round?
I'm not going. You going to tell him?
Don't do it.
I can't tell you. I can't tell you because it will hurt the gate.
On the other hand, Muhammad, there continue to be people who say this is just an act on your part, that inside you're scared, that Liston's better trained for this fight.
No, I don't know nothing about his training. I haven't seen him. I don't care nothing about him. All I know are the people that witnessed me here. I'm in top-notch condition. I'm fast. I'm fastest living heavyweight on 2 feet. And I don't worry about even getting hit. I have James Ellis here with me, the next world light heavyweight champion, the fella that I do predict that will knock out Jose Torres as soon as Torres quit ducking him. And he'll tell you himself, he has an awful hard time hitting me, and he's a fast, light heavyweight.
All right, let's get back to you. You don't see any way that Liston can neutralize your footwork.
If he dreamed he did, he'd apologize.
On the other side of the coin, Liston seems this time to be taking you a lot more seriously than the last time.
Well, I'm taking him a lot more seriously.
Why? If you're as good as you say and as confident as you say.
I'm as confident as I say, and I'm better than I say I am. You really haven't saw the real me yet. You only saw me going into this thing as a beginner, first time, big fight, as a challenger.
You won it as a boy, you defend it as a man.
I won it as a man, and I'll defend it as a man. But I will tell you one thing. You just be there at the fight, and you will see a much, much better fight on my part than you did the last. I held back a lot because I thought maybe the fight might go 15. And now that I see, he gets tired quick. He's old.
You think he's afraid of you?
Cuts, he's scared to death. And he cuts easy.
Let me say this to you. Good luck. I hope it's not an act. I hope you mean it.
If it's an act, just look at my record and see if have the other fights been acts. Have they been acts?
Not so far.
Well, what makes you think I'm acting?
So, of course, Ali stops him in one round, the famous Phantom Punch, all that kind of good stuff. We'll go into that in detail a little bit later. But up until that point, He lost a split decision to a very capable Marty Marshall. I'm talking about Sonny Liston back in 1955 when he was green. Of course, in 59, he beat guys like Cleveland Big Cat Williams, who could fight at that point in time. He beat my boxing mentor, the guy that taught me how to box, the guy that first put a pair of boxing gloves on me. I remember they were the biggest things I've ever seen in my life. They must have been 16 ounces, each of them. Anyway, Eddie Machen, of course, the drunk that he was. He's an alcoholic, but, you know, he was one point in time the number one heavyweight contender in the world. He hung out around 29th and Mission. He was sort of like the unofficial bouncer for some of the loan sharks around there and stuff like that. So Eddie was a little bit dirty, but Eddie saw me kicking the spit out of, spit with an H, of Guy Lambert one time, and Guy was like bigger than me, but what Sonny didn't realize is I jumped, got the jump, what Eddie didn't realize, I got the jump on Guy because Guy was wearing leather shoes, and I was wearing, you know, rubber shoes. So anyway, I realized right then and there, never wear leather shoes to a fight. Anyway, bottom line was I beat up Guy Lambert, Eddie Machen says you can fight, we end up doing this boys club type of thing, he takes me on to Columbia Park, we do these smokers, they got these smoker things with like 1 minute rounds, and at 1 minute rounds, I did pretty good at 1 minute rounds. I didn't get beat at 1 minute rounds. When it went to 2 minute rounds, I lost my first 2 minute round fight. Well, bottom line is, you're stepping up, you're graduating. But, back to Eddie Machen though, who was a fantastic fighter, but Sonny Liston beat him in 1960. So outside of losing to Marty Marshall, he lost the two fights to Ali. He would get knocked out by Leotis Martin in 1969, of course, and finish his career in 1970 against Chuck Wepner. The knockout loss against Martin, I think it was about the ninth round. Martin was 30-5 coming in. Martin's a good fighter. I mean, not a great fighter, but a good fighter. But like an NABF title fight, something like that. But that uppercut, it was like an uppercut, just separated Sonny from his senses. And you know, this is what happens when you get hit with a punch you don't see, especially when you're a monster. When you hit monsters with punches they don't see, they're really like out of it because they've never been hit too often, okay? You hit me with a punch I didn't see, I know what's happening. I've been hit a few times, but the bottom line is these big old monsters like Sonny Liston never been hit. I mean, he really had never been hit until, you know, guys like Leotis Martin clipped him in that one shot he didn't see. Of course, Muhammad Ali clipped him in the second fight. And yes, I will say, and go to my grave, and will say he did not take a dive in that second fight. I think he just got clipped on the chin. He was an old man. I mean, the narrator tried to say he was born somewhere between 1929 and 1932. He might have been born before that. And but I'm betting on 29. I'm not betting on 32 because, I mean, when you look at some of these films of him in the 70s, when I saw him in the 60s, the late 60s at Newman's Gym, when we went down there, you know, we paid the 50 cents to get in. 50 cents. We used to pay to get in that place to watch sparring sessions. Man, I can't believe it. Billy Newman used to charge us 50 cents. Even the kids, we had to pay 50 cents. So anyway, watching Sonny Liston spar down there, watching Jerry Corey spar down there. I mean, maybe it was some interesting stuff back. George Foreman, when he won the Golden Gloves sparring down there. I mean, this sort of set the boxing table for me a little bit later in life. And of course, Hector Martinez has come along and I picked things up and go on a stellar amateur run. Anyway, enough about me. Bottom line is, Sonny Liston was a bad dude. He was the baddest man on the planet. We'll get into that a little bit more after the break. Larry Merchant on him and Hurricane Carter. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
So you can break a second down to 100 pieces. So, you know, yes, quick. So 4 100, they got a machine that goes like real quick. And it counts real quick. You know, real quick.
Can't get enough, Barry White. Check this out. Ooh, Sonny Liston's mother was pregnant. 18.7 years of her life. 225 months if you went to 9 months with each kid. 25 kids. Good Lord, somebody couldn't get enough there, either mommy or daddy. Bottom line is, 25 kids. She must have been a wreck afterwards. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You're inside looking at the world of boxing and MMA. Sonny Liston, of course, 50-4. Died in 1970. Actually, died in 1970, of course. They really don't know the exact date, per se, because when they found his body, it was like 4 or 5 days later. I'm talking about January 4th, January 5th, and he was decomposed to an extent. Of course, his apartment or his house was a hot place there in Las Vegas. The air conditioning was not on. It was locked from the inside. Sonny Liston's apartment was locked from the inside. The windows were sealed. There were no signs of break-in. There were no signs of violence. Sonny didn't have any needle marks in him. Sonny didn't have any marks of violence. In other words, there were no club marks, no black eyes, no bruises. There was nothing to indicate Sonny Liston had been traumatized whatsoever at all. And there was no indication to come to the conclusion, and people have come to this conclusion, baseless, that he overdosed on heroin. I mean, it's unbelievable. So, I mean, when I looked at crime scenes, pictures, I saw one crime scene photo. I was in Las Vegas, I guess about 19, I would say it was about 88, 89, somewhere around there. And Johnny Taco says to me, you know, somebody's got this picture of Sonny's blah. I said, really? He goes, yeah. He goes, I can't get it for you, but, you know, but anyway. So Johnny Taco gets it, and I look at the picture, and I see Sonny Liston laying on the bed, and he's laying on top of the bed, and he's nude. And this purported to be Sonny Liston, because, you know, he was decomposed, and he looked pretty bad. Anyway, decomposed, on the bed, been there 4 or 5 days, and his underwear was down around his ankles. So it doesn't, you know, I mean, think about this for a second, whether he had prostitutes with him the day before or earlier that day or whatever it was. The bottom line is, Sonny couldn't get enough. Like his daddy, he just couldn't get enough. Because, you know, why wear his underwear down around his ankle? I mean, think about this. I mean, I'm not trying to be X-rated or anything like that. I'm trying to be R-rated. I'm just trying to be real here. Think about this. The guy is found dead in his apartment, in his house. It's locked from the inside. All the windows are locked. Okay? And he's on the bed naked with his shorts down around his ankles. I mean, come on. Simply put, he came and went at the same time. That's the best way to describe the ending of Sonny Liston. He went with a smile on his face, I'm pretty sure, okay? But, you know, some people try to say it was heroin, it was the mafia. Yeah, the mafia wanted to kill him because he wouldn't take a dive against Chuck Wetman in his last fight, of course, June of 1970 in Jersey City at the Armory, okay? He busted Chuck Wetman's face up into like, we have the interview, he busted Chuck Wetman's face up into like 4 or 5 different pieces. I mean, kidding, not all these different broken orbital bones, I broke it. Oh, just a mess, okay? So if he was told to take a dive there and he didn't and the mob was mad at him, that was the story going around from, you know, dozens of years, I mean, decades, that the mob got Sonny because he wouldn't take a dive against Chuck Wetner, because Chuck Wetner was going to be like the Rocky apparent. Of course, he was the guy that Sylvester Stallone based the Rocky Balboa character on. Anyway, Chuck Wetner. So Wetner gets beat up in 1970. 6 months later, Sonny Liston's at his house. He doesn't show up for the New Year's Eve party. There's a New Year's Eve party thrown at Maine and Charleston at Johnny Taco's gym. He doesn't show up for the party, and Johnny's saying, eh, I guess not too much. Didn't think too much of it, but he called him a couple times, didn't pick up the phone, so he didn't know what he was doing, because the wife, I think her name was Geraldine, she was out of town, so, you know, when she was away, the mouse would play. So she, you know, Johnny thought that Sonny Liston was out getting some, because, you know, Sonny was a freak when it came to sex, because Paul Gallander, the, so-called, know-it-all, he is a bit to an extent on the Sonny Liston saga. He said that Sonny was with a couple of prostitutes earlier that day and this and that. Well, as I said, Sonny just couldn't get enough, much like his father, couldn't get enough. 25 kids. Think about the anguish that poor woman went through, labor 25 times. For 18 over, almost 19 years pregnant. Good Lord. And I thought Maria Ramirez's mother had a lot of kids with like 12. 12 of them. She had 12 kids. She lived a long time, but she had 12 kids. A couple of them were monsters, though. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, and Sonny was a monster in my mind because, you know, Sonny was this nice, golly gee, whiz type of guy during the week. Hi, how are you? How's things going? Yes, you want me to sign an autograph? Sure. Give him a couple of beers. Get him drunk. Okay, get him a couple of beers before you know it, it's like mother this and mother that and throwing punches and pushing people around and being a bully, this and that. Anyway, that was Sonny Liston. After the break, before the break, we're going to play this clip with Larry Merchant. After the break, I'm going to go into depth on Rubicon. Not enough time? Okay, we'll go to it after the break then. Reuben Hurricane Carter. Let's get to him just for a second. Of course, another command and controversy. A guy that, of course, considered a middleweight great. I don't know. I always thought he was overrated. I mean, what was his record? Like 27 and, you know, I mean, he lost like 12 fights. Had a draw. I mean, no great record there in my mind, but 27-12-1. Okay, that was his record, okay? Good puncher, 20 KOs, I believe. Of course, beat guys like, you know, Georgie Benton. Of course, the guy that came to fame as a trainer of Evander Holyfield, and of course, that entire Lou Duva team that was put together after the 84 Olympics. George Benton was a trainer. Lou Duva was just a front man in the corner. Of course, Lou Duva showing what his worth was in the Melder Taylor Julio Cesar Chavez fight the first time, when of course when Chavez had knocked Taylor down in that 12th round, and the whole fight was on the line, and Big Fat Lou, the Fred Flintstone of boxing, was standing on the ring with his arms jumping up and down, and Meldrick was looking at him instead of looking at referee Richard Steele. So Steele said, Meldrick, look at me, look at me, look at me. He wouldn't look at him, not once but twice. I think he even said 2.5 times, man, look at me, please. And Meldrick wouldn't, because his, you know, in the old days, especially like in Philly and this and that, we're talking about fighters from the 70s, and when you listen to fighters from the 60s, when you get knocked down, look to your corner. They used to tell me that, look to your corner. I wasn't looking to my corner when I got knocked down. I was looking to get up. What the hell would I want to look to my corner for? You tell me to stay down? When are they going to tell me to stay down? What are they going to, your corner ain't going to do snot for you. Okay? It's you. When you get knocked down in a fight, you got to know what time it is as far as the count, where it's going, this and that. And a lot of times when you get, if you do get knocked down, especially with a punch you don't see, you get semi-concussed, you know where I'm coming from, and you really don't pick up the count right away, and you realize, whoa, whoa, time to get up here, time to get up. And then you do get up, but anyway. Back to Ruben Hurricane Carter. Knocked out Emil Griffith, of course, the future world middleweight champion. Knocked him out in 63. Knocked him out one round in Pittsburgh. So he had some good wins. I said he beat Georgie Benton, who was 47-7 at the time. Benton was like the uncrowned champion. But he couldn't beat Luis Rodriguez. Lost to him twice, of course. And then Jimmy Ellis. He lost to Jimmy Ellis. Who was Jimmy Ellis? Jimmy Ellis was a future. I take that back. He beat Jimmy Ellis on a fight. So Jimmy Ellis, the former WBA heavyweight title holder, that was the guy that Ali said was the second best heavyweight in the world. And earlier, Ali said he would win the light heavyweight title. Never won the light heavyweight title. Campaigned as a heavyweight. James Ellis, of course, turned into a singer. A bit of I don't think he had an album. Maybe he didn't even have an album. Anyway, he was singing at the International Boxing Hall of Fame. And all I could say was, he couldn't sing. It's sort of like with Carmen Basilio, the former world welterweight champion, the man that beat Sugar Ray Robinson. He told me when I sung him happy birthday on the radio, he said, "What did you do with the money, son?" I said, "Pardon me, Mr. Basilio?" He goes, "Yeah, what did you do with the money your mother gave you for singing lessons? Because you can't sing." You know, I haven't sang anybody happy birthday since then. Bottom line is, you are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. After the break, I'm going to go into depth, of course, on Reuben Hurricane Carter and the fact that he was arrested for a triple homicide in 1966. Of course, as I said, took place at the Lafayette Bar and Grill in Paterson, New Jersey. Some people say he did it. Some people say he didn't do it. I'll get to my conclusions. Of course, they had the autobiography in which a lot of people took part in this. They thought that he was a hero and, you know, he was wrongly convicted. And of course, Bob Dylan did the 1975 song Hurricane, the 1999 film Hurricane. Of course, Denzel Washington playing Carter. But the bottom line is, you know, we'll talk about Reuben Carter in depth. Some people might not like it, you know, because I'm not one of those guys that tends to kiss somebody's ass when I don't think their ass needs kissing. Anyway, you are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Check it, your inside look into the world of boxing and mixed martial arts. Speaking of Emil Griffith, my little email story. We're in Canastota, New York, the International Boxing Hall of Fame, and the renowned boxing matchmaker, Eric Botcher, is in the bathroom reading the various newspapers, because back in the days in the 90s, that's what we did. We read newspapers. Like, so he's got like 4 or 5 newspapers in the bathtub. And Emil Griffith is gay. And everybody knew that Emil was gay. And Eric Botcher was like the most homophobic dude in the entire world. I kid you not. He's been my buddy from the Gilroy Dispatch. That's how I met him. He was writing for the Gilroy Dispatch down there in Gilroy, California back in 1988. But he was the most homophobic guy in the entire world. So he's in the bathtub. And I tell him, there's a knock on the door. It was the maid. The maid was knocking on the door. She, you know, she wanted to come in clean. So he says, "Hey, who's at the door, man?" I said, "It's Emil Griffith. He's here and he wants to talk to you." All of a sudden, you heard all this noise like the whole world was coming to an end. There was more water on the floor in the bathroom than there was in the tub. Eric comes running out, basically half-dressed, right? Homophobic, scared. He thought the gay guy was a knock on the door. I kid you not. That's how scary Eric was. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live. We're all right. Eric, you know it's the truth. This is Ring Talk, your inside look in the world of boxing and MMA. Hurricane Carter, more after the break.
Shots rang out in a barroom night. story of the hurricane. The many authorities came to blame for something that he never done. But in a prison cell for one time, he could have been the champion of the world.
Bob Dylan, talk about Reuben Hurricane Carter, and he had a good run. I mean, he had a good run, but as far as the uncrowned champion, I think he was a bit overrated. It said 27-12. He was stopped one time. Couldn't beat Luis Rodriguez for some reason. Lost to Joey Giardello. But his peak was in 1963. Of course, he was grabbed by the police in 1966. But in 1963, he knocks out Emil Griffith in the aforementioned Emil Griffith in one round. Emil was a great guy to be around. I loved being around him. I had a great time being around him. And, of course, then he knocked out James Ellis, who couldn't sing a lick. James Ellis, I said, released that CD at the International Boxing Hall of Fame. I think it was like $5 or $10. There weren't people in line for the CD. I just put you. James Ellis thought he was a singer. Jimmy Ellis thought he was a singer. But he beats Jimmy Ellis in 1964, February of 1964, of course, by a unanimous nod. That was in Madison Square Garden, a 10-round fight. Of course, wow, he beats the former WBA, the future WBA heavyweight title of the guy that Muhammad Ali said would become the light heavyweight champion of the world. Of course, that never happened. He ended up having a portion of the WBA heavyweight title, I think, just for a minute because of the fact that Muhammad Ali had his title taken. Straight up, Reuben Hurricane Carter and Sonny Liston, a guy that we know a whole lot about, takes a hard look at both guys. Talk about the godfather, Larry Merchant.
Larry, let's go back 50 years. The Ali Liston fights. Of course, the first one was. Were either of these fights fixed in your mind? You were there for probably both of them, I believe.
No, I think sometimes when things are unexpected and sometimes unexplainable, people look for conspiracy theories and the myth. Sometimes is better than the truth. And the simple truth was is that Ali was too young and fast and tough and bold for Liston. Liston gave up in the first fight. He just quit because he wasn't used to being in there with somebody who was banging him around like that. And and in fact, Liston tried to blind him by using that astringent substance on his gloves, his shoulders, that got in Ali's eyes. I know this because I was sports editor of the Philadelphia Daily News at the time, and my boxing writer was very close to the people in Liston's corner, and they told him that's what he did, and that he had done it previously in fights.
Sonny the Bully Liston, of course, died in his Las Vegas apartment, his Las Vegas home. You know, Larry, there's a lot of controversy around that, but according to the late Davey Pearl, who managed him, and I think Johnny Taco, the gym manager of the Main Street Gym in Las Vegas, who found Liston and who worked with Liston back in the St. Louis days in the 50s, Sonny was found naked with his shorts down around his ankles and the doors locked from the inside. It sort of tells me that I hate to put it this way, but he sort of came and went at the same time, if you can see where I'm going there.
Yeah, look, you know, Liston, I met Sonny Liston when he first came to Philadelphia. And he was a likable guy, but he soon started to misbehave in public with front page stories about it and didn't trust the media. The only guy he trusted was my fight writer, Jack McKinney, who kind of empathized with him because Liston had come from a family of over 20, from the old Jim Crow South, and he was illiterate and was being, at that time, run by the mob and so forth. But he was a bad guy for whatever reason. And he couldn't handle. He was a bully who, when a guy came along who stood in his face, showed who he was. And in the second fight, the one round knockout, Pedro, I have actually seen punch frame by frame footage of the punch. I actually was sitting ringside and saw the punch. Now, so nobody can tell me it was a phantom punch. I didn't think at the time that it was a knockout punch because I'd never seen Liston on the floor. But the frame-by-frame footage showed that his head jarred back, that it was one of those medulla oblongata knockouts in which the knockout comes not because it, a punch landed on a nerve, but because the head jerked back when a guy didn't see a punch coming. Be that as it may, probably 100 years from now, they'll still be talking about the Phantom Punch.
Okay, real quick. Reuben Hurricane Carter, did he do it?
Are you talking about his criminal?
Yeah, I mean, did he commit those murders in that bar or not?
I just have to go along with what the law eventually found, which was that he was innocent. I knew a lawyer, a guy named Lewis, who handled his case and his appeals and all that, and he was a top flight lawyer, and he thought he was innocent. But other people have asked me that question, and that's the only answer I have.
Reuben Hurricane Carter, of course, middleweight contender, the Hurricane song and the movie, all that kind of good stuff. You know, he wasn't all that good after beating, of course, I mentioned earlier, he beat James Ellis. I mean, James Ellis could fight. There was no doubt about it. James Ellis, of course, will go on to win the WBA heavyweight title. So he beats Ellis, he beats Emil Griffith, beats a guy named Clarence James, loses to Joey Giardello for the middleweight title, okay, a 15-round decision. Loses his next fight to Luis Rodriguez. Couldn't beat Luis Rodriguez for nothing. Anyway, goes a couple of wins. Loses again to a guy named Harry Scott, who was 22-15. Then he loses, take that back, he beats a guy with an 18-23 record. Then he loses to Dick Tiger, in 15-16. Dick Tiger could fight, lost a 10-round decision to Dick Tiger. Then he loses a couple fights later again to his nemesis, Luis Rodriguez. Okay, then he went 1-2-3, had a couple of wins, and he went 2 losses more. Of course, both by decision, one by split decision, and then he ended his career with a loss in 10 rounds to Juan Carlos Rivera back in 1966. So when he went to jail in 1966, he was far past his peak. Okay, so they didn't rob him from being the champion and like that. I mean, the guy was essentially a club fighter at this point in time, or a glorified club fighter, a guy that had fought for the title a couple of times. But that's it. He was a title challenger. He wasn't nothing more. Okay, so this legend that they locked up, you know, the Muhammad Ali, the Sugar Ray Leonard, the Sugar Ray Robinson, oh, the Archie Moore, no. Reuben Hurricane Carter, he is not on that level. Just not on that level, okay? Would I say he's a good fighter? Yes, he beat Emil Griffith, there's no doubt about it. Griffith probably had a great credential. Emil was then going to be the future middleweight champion. Of course, James Ellis, he beat James Ellis as well. So, I mean, that right then and there, he beat some other guys on his record that were good. But overall, I would have to say he is of journeyman status. Now, as far as him committing the murders, Larry says that you have to go with what the judicial says. Of course, you know, I'm an ex-cop, and, you know, I'm an ex-cop, and I'm just sort of like, I'll put it to you like this. All right, put it this way. In 1967, they were convicted, okay? One time, then they released them, and a few weeks later, they arrested them in 1967, and they were convicted of three words, artisan, and Carter, okay? They were given life sentences in Rahway State Prison, okay? They had a retrial in 1976, and that upheld their sentences. But it was overturned in 1985, and then the prosecutors declined to try the case a third time after their appeal to the Supreme Court failed. So, you know what I'm trying to say? I mean, no jury ever said that Reuben Hurricane Carter was innocent. I mean, his autobiography says it, the 16th round, but, you know, I don't know, he was a little shady, out a little bit late. And like my lieutenant used to say, George Clement, he was a drunk, he was, you know, Irish drunk with the SFPD, good guy, I loved him, of course, get this, I was a cop out of Terrible Station in San Francisco, which is out in the avenues near the beach, on 24th and Terrible, and he was 24th Avenue, and George Clement was my lieutenant, and he used to drink. So he used to drink, you know, he would get his paperwork done, and that's all a lieutenant did, was do paperwork. He did his paperwork, and then he would go down to this bar on like 46th Avenue and 46th and Judah, and he'd drink till like 3 or 4 or 5 in the morning. So I'd have to go get him.
That's sort of cool. I had to go get, drunk lieutenant. You know, that sort of went, that's the way it went back in the SFPD days. But as far as Hurricane Carter getting stroked by the cops, and I don't know, man. I think Hurricane was, hey, like Clement said, if you're out at 4 o'clock in the morning and you're not going from point A to point B, you're up to no good. Straight up. Well, I think he's got a point there. Let's switch gears. Talk about the UFC. Of course, UFC up with their next, I think the big pay-per-view upcoming. One of them is UFC 250. And of course, Amanda Nunes, the baddest woman pound for pound in the history of the sport. She knocked out Chris Cyborg Santos. Of course, she destroyed Ronda Rousey. Oh God, did she? And of course, she beat Miesha Tate. I mean, Miesha Tate beat Ronda Rousey. So, I mean, Miesha Tate beat Holly Holm. So Holly Holm beat Ronda Rousey. So, I mean, Amanda's beating them all. She's taking on Megan Anderson. Good luck, Megan. That's going to go down, of course, on the undercard of Jan Blachowicz and Israel Adesanya, going to hook it up in a lightweight championship fight. Of course, Blachowicz, now the light heavyweight champion, 205 pounds of the UFC. Israel, former the 185 pound champion, now moving up to light heavyweight. Good luck with that. Moving up in weight is not as easy as people think it is. They're just not. You say, oh, you know, I had problems making the weight. I'll just move up a few pounds. Yeah, right. I mean, listen, you can feel the difference between a couple of pounds. Like I was in prime shape, 142 pounds. I could feel it fighting a guy 145, 146. Just a three or four. You could. I mean, size and weight matters. Size matters in two things, right? Pornography and combat sports. Combat sports for sure. Anyway, Amanda Nunes, the first openly lesbian champion in UFC history, married a fellow UFC fighter, Nina Asheroff, of course, who competes in the strawweight division. Anyway, the bottom line is she credits her success to her relationship. Good luck on that one. Of course, her records, 20 wins, 4 losses. She's been stopped twice by a knockout, once by submission, once by decision. Of course, Megan Anderson, good luck on that one, pound for pound. Amanda Nunes is the best as far as the women are concerned in the world of mixed martial arts right now. Now, of course, they didn't want to give Chris Cyborg Santos a rematch. Why? Because Cyborg probably would, I think had a good damn good chance of beating her. What did they do to Cyborg the first time? They changed sites. The fight was going to be in Las Vegas. So she's coming down from like 180 pounds. She's not fat. She's coming down like from 160 pounds to 145 for the fight. And she's coming down. They switched locations on her, made the fight go to LA from Las Vegas because John Jones was disqualified from fighting in Las Vegas because of possible steroid issues. They took him to California. They fought at the Forum. They had to switch locations. She had to sit in a car for 5 or 6 hours going down the road trying to lose weight at the same time. That must have been ugly. Anyway, bottom line is, I would have given her a better than average shot in the rematch. Amanda Nunes, I don't think is that good. I think she got the first punch in. I think if Cyborg would have hit her, it might have been the same thing. Anyway, Amanda Nunes in action is Megan Anderson. Good luck with that. As far as the rest of the UFC schedule is concerned, I like this heavyweight fight. You know what I'm talking about. You know exactly what I'm talking about. Yee, the monster. I mean, when heavyweights are, when you talk about heavyweights, so Stipe Miocic is the world heavyweight champion. I mean, there's just no doubt about it. And there's, I mean, kid from Cleveland, good Golden Glove champion. I mean, no doubt about it. But Francis Ngannou came so close to beating him in that first fight. I mean, almost had him out in the first round. Of course, lost because of stamina issues down the stretch. I don't think stamina issues are going to play a point this time. In fact, we're looking for a new heavyweight champion as far as the UFC is concerned when he smokes. I'm telling you, Francis Ngannou will smoke Stipe Miocic this time like a blunt, a New York City blunt. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Check it. You're inside looking at the world of boxing, MMA. Peter Frampton to the break. You are tuned to the Sports Byline Broadcast Network.
Lines on my head from that one thing you said. She spoke of strangers that don't speak to a bear. Kept on trying, buying time. No.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
He would try, and then I would bring it back down. And it worked, man. I just wanted to gas him out and get him tired. You know, it's a big boy. He's got a lot of muscle on him, you know, and there's a lot of oxygen to carry for a big boy like that.
UFC heavyweight champion Stipe Miocic, of course, talking about Francis Ngannou in the rematch coming real soon. Bottom line is, somebody shot me a text here. Bruce Amaniak wanted to know what was in Sonny Liston's, what was it? chemicals. He had Moncel solution. Moncel solution is an acidic thing that uses little metal particles, and it burns your cuts together. It sort of turns cuts black. Anyway, when you put that on people's bodies and it rubs into somebody's eyes, it makes them cry. They have vision problems. Bottom line is, that's what Larry Merchant was talking about earlier in the hour. Now, I want to mention the fact that I have not been able to get a hold of John Johnson. Who is John Johnson? John Johnson is a former Ohio State football coach under the great Woody Hayes. I think he coached the defensive backfield at one point in time in the 80s and the early 70s. And, of course, he would become the manager of future heavyweight champion Buster Douglas, the man that pulled the meltdown of Mike Tyson in Tokyo. He put that all together, okay? They met, like, in Buster's somebody's kitchen, and before you knew it, they had a contract. And anyway, John Johnson disconnected his phone. He's no longer on Facebook. Of course, he was diagnosed with lung cancer, and the last time he appeared on the show, he said that he had kicked lung cancer and he had beaten it. And, you know, bottom line is, now he's not answering the phone. The phone's disconnected, and I'm not hearing from him, so I'm a bit scared. Anyway, you are tuned. May he be in good health. A little emotional there. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, your inside look in the world of boxing and MMA. Don't forget, we come to you 7 days a week on Anchor.fm. That's right, the podcast at Anchor.fm or anywhere you get your podcast. Ring Talk Live Worldwide rocks. Of course, live Saturday and Sundays, 11 a.m. Pacific time. That's 2 p.m. Eastern time, live on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM, Satellite Radio, Channel 217, and about 1,000 other internet platforms. Often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Pedro Fernandez. Thank you for listening to Ring Talk Live Worldwide.